Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety.
Oh God, I lost my paddle.
Gear. And anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, it's time for another Gear Garage Live Show. It's 2 p.m. on Tuesday. We normally do this at 2 p.m. on Tuesday. This is where I just chat about things I want to chat about and answer questions people submitted during the week. If you submitted a question, thank you very much. If you haven't, you can do it now. You can just go in the comments now, ask a question, and I'll get to it. We have quite a few questions today, so I'm going to just kind of jump into things. The first thing I want to talk about is this Ecuador rowing school I just got back from. We've been looking for new venues to do rowing schools or take people to row. And I just got back from a week in Ecuador, just over a week, and it was pretty sweet. I was pretty impressed by the country, by my partner down there, Santi from Kayak Ecuador, from the rivers we have available to us. I just want to point out, it's a pretty cool trip. I just set the date for next year. It'll be the end of January. It's a good way to go boating in the winter. Like, you boat all summer, or you boat sometime in the summer. It's a good way to boat, do a little bit of boating in the winter. It's 7 days. We're in the country, 2 days to go to and from, 1 day off, and 4 days of boating, 4 days of actual boating. And so if you want to learn more about it, I'm going to add more information as later in the week, but there's some pretty basic information on our website here. And yeah, it's a pretty cool trip. I just want to throw it out there for anybody interested. We're definitely doing one of these next year. We might do two. So if there's enough interest, we're going to add a second one. So I just want to throw it out there. If you have questions, send me an email. Ask it here in the comments, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have. With that, let's get into questions. And let me make questions bigger. The first one's a review request. Hey, Zach, I love your channel. I have a quick question. Could you do a review of the Kokatan Maximus Centurion PFD? My apologies if you've done one already in your library. I don't think I've done one. And I used to have a similar one. It's a cool PFD. And if you remember right, it has a little bit more flotation than regular PFDs. It's not just like 16 and a half. So we have one coming. And thanks for the request. Because when I have questions like this, it's much easier for me to ask the manufacturer if I can have one to review. A lot of times I'll buy them. But right now I own like 10 PFDs. So I didn't want to buy another PFD just to sit on the shelf. But we reached out to Kokatan. They're going to send this one to review. And I think because of this request. So hopefully get something up next week. I'll be a little longer because I should probably kayak in it. Let me kayak in it, I'll raft in it, and I'll do a review. But I have paddled it a bit, and my first impression is just a quick impression of it is I like the pockets, I like the quality, and it has more flotation, which is really good. We like flotation. For kayaking, I didn't like it as much because the flotation was bulk. And so it made it a little bit harder to kayak. And it's sort of like the same thing with the Astral, whatever the one is that has extra flotation. It's not coming to mind. But the new one, they came out last year. And sort of like the Palm Nevis, which I love too. I paddled in the Palm Nevis all last week. But again, like, it has some extra bulk, so it's harder for kayaking. For rowing, that doesn't matter. Or for rafting, it doesn't matter. The bulk doesn't usually matter. But the flotation helps. So for me, I think I like it a little bit more for rafting, not as much for kayaking, if I'm just doing normal kayaking. So yeah, I'll get a review up next week. All right, moving on. Chetco, how far does the Chetco go up from its mouth at the ocean before it hits a class 3? Oh man, I have no idea. That's a great question. I want to guess. My guess is a ways, but I mean, I don't spend that much time on the Chetco. And when I do, it's on the harder section. So I haven't done this easier section for a long time. And/or is there a decently long and car accessible for put in and take out section where the rapids do not go above class 2? Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I mean, people fish it. If you're in Brookings, from there's a section of people doing drip boats. They fish it. There's a road along the whole thing. Yeah, the lower Chetco, I believe, is all class 2. I've only done it once, so it could be a class 3. But the place I would look, let me keep reading the question. Thank you so much. I'm a 75-year-old, very new kayak lover, skilled to some extent, but not whitewater. If there's a no on the Chetco, any other river on the coast or even anywhere to recommend? It's hard to recommend it not knowing you personally. Like, what do you want? Do you want scenery? Do you want class two? I don't know. The lower rogue is a possibility. There's a bunch of class one and maybe two on the lower rogue. If anybody else has suggestions, that'd be great. To learn more about the Chetco, I'm going to go to Tim Palmer's Field Guide to Oregon Rivers. Tim Palmer is one of my favorite people in the world to bow with. And he writes a field guide to Oregon Rivers. He also has one for California, I believe. And I think he's working on one for Washington. Tate did an interview with him. Danger Tate did an interview with him a few weeks ago. They talk about this. It's a field guide to the rivers. It's not a whitewater guide, right? So a whitewater guide might leave out the class two because a lot of people think the class two is boring. They're like, it's not interesting for a whitewater perspective. This river is full of class two rivers because Tim is sharing, and he's a canoeist. And so as a canoeist, class two is heaven. And so this river is full of the class two sections of rivers. I think it has some harder rivers too, but this is about the place, about whitewater, about hiking. It's like getting to know the rivers, not just, you know, like I'm paddling whitewater, I'm awesome, look at me. It's more holistic. So I would start with this book. And Tim lives near the Chetco. The one time I did the lower Chetco was with him. So he knows it. So I would highly recommend getting this book. And I'm sure it talks about, do I have that book in right here? No, I don't see it right here. I have a couple copies of it, but not right here. But this would be the resource I would use for class two rivers, especially of the South Oregon coast. Mike's saying Drift Creek of the Alsea is class 2-3 wilderness rental growth. Yeah, you know, I've always wanted to do this. I hear this is an awesome trip. But again, it's class, the question's about class two. So as soon as you had class three, it may not be appropriate. But there's a ton of class two rivers. I remember when I was kayaking in California, I had a rough swim, and I took a season and thought, you know what, I should just see all the class two rivers too. And most people skip over the class two. You know, I took a bad swim. I was a little like, I need to just like tone it down a little bit, do easier stuff, and just care more about the places and less about the whitewater. And there are some spectacular class two rivers in California that are largely overlooked by paddlers. And the same thing in Oregon. There's zillions of miles of awesome class two whitewater. They're stunningly beautiful and special that we just skip because we're more focused on being rad or running rapids and less on the place. And this book would be where I would go to get more. So great question. Okay, next question. Sleepy Pad. Hi, Zach. Love the show. I operate a small bit operating business and always appreciate your information analysis. Thank you. That's nice to hear. I mean, I didn't think that any other outfitters watched the show. And I mean, that's pretty cool. That actually makes me feel cool that outfitter gets something from this. The intention is not for outfitting, but I'm cool. It's cool that it is. So thank you. I'm repairing and replacing gear for the coming season and wondering what your favorite client sleeping pad is. Okay. Oh man, I'm doing the same thing. Repairing and replacing gear right now. And sleeping pads are, that's a tough one. So let me finish reading your question. I'm excited about this. Our trips all involve some bush flying. So big Paco pads like Paco's are out of the question. I've been trying to find something a little more plush than the old standard Therm-Rest base camp model, but I've been plagued with leaky materials and valve. Love to know what you use. Yeah, I have the exact same problem. I don't really like Paco pads. People get all gaga-goo over Paco pads. A couple of things. One, they're big and bulky and annoying. Like carrying, you know, if I have 30 people on a trip, if I have 30 Paco pads, it almost takes a gear boat just to carry 30 Paco pads. And also, you're sleeping on plastic. Like you're inhaling plastic all night. Your face is like next to this like plastic thing. They're comfy and they're durable, but I don't know, from a health perspective, I don't think they're the most awesome things you can have. And the new Therm-Rest type pads are actually pretty thick, especially if you put them next to a Paco pad. A Paco pad is just a piece of foam covered in some plastic. It's not rocket science. Whereas like Therm-Rests, they've really thought through how to make them more and more comfortable, and they're pretty sweet. So let me see if I can go back to the internet. We used Alps sleeping pads for a while. And you get a good outfitter price if you're an outfitter. Let me see if I can pull up their website. We used some of their sleeping pads for a while. And I started to feel, something kind of like this one. And the advantage of Alps is they're pretty affordable. The price is really good on them. We were going through them so fast because they break. Like you said, the valves break. These valves are kind of durable. These valves are very durable, but the area around it would get little holes. You know, like right here, there would be holes. And we were going through them so fast. And I don't like to buy things that break. I like to buy things that don't break and are repairable. These Alps pads weren't very repairable, so we were just throwing so many away. And so I got kind of frustrated with them. But these are an option. If you're okay with throwing things away, just like buying them cheap and just throwing them away, it's not a bad option. I don't think these ones are a good option for outfitting, but the ones like this one, next page. Let's see if you can see more pads. These are the best sellers. But they have a lot of options. How do I see? Is that all the pads they have? No, they have more. Here, thickness. Let's go to the thickest ones. Let's see what they have. No, those are too thick. I can't figure out how to use a website. You'd think you would just go to like camping gears and pads, and you would see all of them. They used to have a lot. Maybe this is all they have now. Sort by price, high to low. Let's see what happens there. Maybe this is all they have now. So this is a decent option, but really Therm-a-Rest, we've switched to Therm-a-Rest because they're more repairable and I think they're higher quality and they're more expensive and they're known for sleeping pads. And let's see, Fast and Light. I like Fast and Light for backpacking, but I like the camp and comfort ones. And specifically, I think this is the one that we use. And you can see it's basically twice the price, the retail. This is it, the base camp sleeping pad. I think we get the large. So the retail price is more than twice the Alps one. But we found they're more durable. We found that the valve works a little bit better. And they're pretty thick. I mean, when these are blown up correctly, they're 2 inches thick right here, 2 inches of thickness, which is comparable with a Paco pad. So again, more expensive. I'd say a little more comfortable, pretty thick, pretty repairable. We get holes in them so every so often. We've learned how to repair the holes so we're not throwing them away. And the area around the valve doesn't blow out as much like the Alps one did. There's also this luxury one that's even thicker. But we went with this one, and I think it's pretty good. Let's look at Paco pads really quick. So that's 2 inches. Let's see how thick a typical Paco pad is. I'm just looking for the straight up regular Paco pad. Let's see, super small, silverback. There's so many choices now. Let's just go with the Paco pad. This looks like the stand. This looks standard. 260, so even more expensive. But thickness is 1.5 inches. So the standard Paco pad is 1.5 inches. The Therm-a-Rest is 2 inches. So it's, according to their marketing, thicker. I think this is more durable. The Paco pads are more durable for sure because they're like heavy duty plastic. But if you take care of the Therm-a-Rest ones, they do really well. Now people on the trips can go, we wear my Paco pads. Everybody knows about Paco pads. I mean, we just don't have them, but our pads are thicker and we think more comfortable. They just take a little bit more time to blow up. So hopefully that answers your question there. Let's see. Tom says Paco pads more foam. I don't know how the insides work. It's just, but if you open one up, it's just a piece of foam. The Therm-a-Rests, I don't think just have a piece of foam. They have some like super advanced, cool thing inside. But I'm not an expert on pads. But the Paco is just, it's really basic foam. Like it's not, you just like, when you cut one in half and look at it, like, oh, that's just a boring piece of foam. Where I think modern backpacking, camping, Therm-a-Rest style pads are a little bit more high-tech and cool. All right, Diane, will you be running the Upper Wind Fest again this year? Was the low water during the recent dry spell? What was the water during the recent dry spell, rebound from recent rains? So I'll be paddling at the Upper Wind Fest. If you say running as in like running the river, yes. If you mean running it as in organizing it, I've never organized it, and I will not ever organize it. That's just not something that's in my wheelhouse. Scott, I think Scott still organizes it, and he does a great job. Was the water low during the recent dry spell? Yeah, it was low, but like it came in here and there and rebounded with recent rains. I think it's back up, but I think it's still low right now. But it's amazing. We've done the Wind Festival for like, I don't know, 15, 20 years, whatever it is. I don't know, a lot of years. And there's always the problem. I've never seen low water. And even if it was low, we run the race. We just go, like we ran it once super low. And it's just, do you have the skills to run a super low? And they just adjusted the course to start and finish at a different place. The issue more is high water, because if it's high, it's high. Like, and when you start getting that 7 feet, it starts to get a little harder. The 8 feet level, like, dangerous for a lot of people. And I really worry about the safety of it when it's high like that. So, yeah. And he asks, if you're running again, would you like to see the mid-run Riverside Beer Garden? Yeah, I'm not, again, I'm running the river, not the festival. But that mid-run Riverside Beer Garden was spectacular. That was one of the coolest things we've ever done at a Wind Festival. So you like do the race, paddle down like a mile, and there's just a big party on River Left. I think the people that own the land, ATV down a keg and some beer, we had a fire. That was spectacular. So like I'm not running it, so I'm not the person to ask about actually organizing the beer festival. As the person who's a participant, I'm like, yes, we definitely want that. Please do it. But I believe Scott Michael is the organizer. And if you just go to Facebook and just search for the Upper Whitewater Wind Festival, contact that, like there's a page or an event or something, try to find the organizer through that. The best page there is through that. I don't do the actual organizing, but I'm grateful for those that do. Okay, so anyway, I hope they answered this question about sleeping pads. The quick answer is, dude, sorry, this is a sucky subject, but the best I found after testing a lot of pads is that base camp at Thermarest. They're the OG. They're the original people that made these pads. So, you know, seems like they know what they're doing. So, and they're made in the U.S., well-made, good pads. Okay, several years ago, I bought a used 2009 Moravia glue-up boat. One of my seams has developed a leak, and I'm having trouble finding the right information on the proper repair of such a unique boat. If you have any info about this, I'd appreciate it. I love your YouTube channel and what you guys do for the water community. I love these comments. Thank you for saying nice things. Yeah, that's super nice. Thank everybody who's said nice things. Thank you. You know, when you put yourself out there on the internet, there's a chance everybody's like, this guy, who does this idiot think he is? And they probably think that, but they don't say it to me, so it doesn't hurt my ego. But if you were like, who do you think you are having a YouTube channel? That would hurt my feelings. So thank you for not hurting my feelings. To be honest with you on this question, I have no idea what you're asking, and I guarantee I don't know the answer. I know a lot of stuff, but not this. I don't know what a glue-up boat is, and repairing Moravias are hard. I would call Moravia. That would probably be the people I would call them and ask them, because they probably know what a glue-up boat is, and they know how to do repair. Your best bet is to call Moravia, unless there's a repair people near you. I know some stuff, but not this. Okay, John Day Sup. I stumbled on your content about Sup Adventure on the John Day. I'm motivated to do something very similar and found your advice and tips helpful. I'm reaching out to you regarding my plans, and if you have insight as to the stretch of river I plan to paddle, John Day, 50 miles from Service Creek to Clairno, before the rapids, I think. If you know what type of waters these are in June, I would be grateful and very appreciative for any input you have. I feel pretty confident about my ability to handle class 2, but not sure about class 3. So I did a trip with some friends. I was really into supping a few years ago. And I did a trip with some friends where we supped. I thought it was 70 miles, John Day Sup. And I wrote a trip report here somewhere. And there's actually this OPB video, too, that Sup Paul did about the same trip that we did. But I wrote this blog post. I think you're referring to this blog post. And right here it says the 70-mile section from Clarendon Cottonwood has tons of class 2 and 3 rapids with a few class 3s throw them in. So I think it's not class 2 all the way. But just so you know, I did this trip, what was it, like 15 years ago? Let's look and see if the date's on here. I posted this in 2014, so 11 to 12 years ago. The reason I post these show reports is so that I have a written record of what I did to help people. I don't remember much. This was 11 years ago. My memory is not that good. I remember it was fun. I remember we had duck cooked in bacon grease. I remember Kevin lost a tooth. That's about all I remember. And I remember it was 70 miles. So I would say, like, the information in this blog post that I think you found is better than what I'm going to tell you here. Like, I can't tell you any more than what's here because it's been so long. And again, the reason to be right, I wrote this post. Let me show you the post. So the reason I wrote this post is because I want to share information about something knowing I'll forget it in the future. And it's good to look at the photos and memories. This Clarno Rapid was the hardest. I'd say it's borderline class 4. I think people call it class 4. And there were some other rapids that were definitely class 3. So, if you want it to be class 2, I don't think this is the right trip. Unless you portage. I mean, I have to look at the information on the John Day, but I think there's some class 3 as well. So if you're not sure about your class 3, this probably isn't the trip for you, I'm guessing. And I mean, again, service. So we did Cottonwood to Clarno, and you're saying Service Creek to Clarno. You might be skipping. I can't remember even where the rapid was. Where's Service Creek? Wait, we did Clarno to Cottonwood. Oh, Service Creek to Clarno. So the part upstream. I didn't even do the part upstream, so I don't know anything about it. I'm gonna send you to. Yeah, so we did Clarno Cottonwood. Service Creek to Clarno, I don't know, might be class 2. I'm going to also send you to Tim Palmer Field Guide to Oregon. So, like, this book, I'm sure Tim talks about that section. I've never done it, so I can't give you advice. But this book is spectacular, and it has all these class 2 sections well documented in there. If you know what type of waters there are in June. And then there's the June factor. Like, is it? It in June, there might be heavy snowmelt and raging flooding. So it might be two in theory, but if it's super high water, it could be more dangerous. So, some of my advice is if you're asking me on the internet if you're able to run the river, in general, you're probably not ready to run the river. I if you're asking somebody who doesn't know you to give you input about whether or not you're ready for something, I don't think you're ready. So, yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, that, so my guess is you're not ready because you should have books, you should have maps, not asking some random dude who has an internet show. That's not the best way to figure out where to go. So sorry, I don't have any good answers for you. I get asked a lot by a lot of people. Its permits come out in a couple of days. As soon as they do, my phone rings off the hook. I've done the blah, 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 blah. Can I handle the white salmon on July 17th? And I tell people over and over and over, I can't, I don't know. I don't know you. I don't know your friends. And by you telling me your resume over the phone, that doesn't mean you, if you say you're a class 3 boater on the phone, I've learned that doesn't mean you're a class 3 boater in person. Like, people are really bad at self-awareness about their abilities. So, I mean, I don't, without actually knowing you and boating with you, it's really hard to give you or anybody advice on what rivers they can run. Maybe if I know you, I know what you can personally do, but then do I know your team? Do I know the people you're with? Are you setting safety? Are you aware of safety issues? Are you aware of setting safety for each other? Do you have the right safety equipment? Is your PFD adequate for you? Like, it's just, there's so much to it. So it's really hard for me to answer this. And I know, like, I think permits maybe come out tomorrow, whatever. I get so many calls from people that got permits but don't know if they can handle the river, which is very frustrating to me because there's a ton of people that can handle the river that then didn't get that permit. When you just went for it and took it away from them without the ability to do it. So, sorry, I went on a little bit of a tangent there, but it's a quick answer. It's like, I don't know the section you're asking about. and without knowing you personally, I don't know if you can handle it. And my biggest input would be make sure that the water levels, if you find it's class two, and if you believe you can run class two, make sure the water levels are appropriate. Because in June, the snow melt can come down and be super high water and be potentially dangerous. And high water, I think there's eight like things we need to think about in terms of danger. Four personal things we can do, like wear a PFD, don't drink. What are the other two? There's a few more. There's four things we can, choices we can make. Two, like I call them behaviors. The four environmental things, like don't run man-made objects, watch out for strainers, watch out for foot entrapments, watch out for high water and cold water, right? Oh, one of the, so like, so and then the choice is one of us dress appropriate for the river water temperature. So most accidents are one of those eight things, are there involved? And I'd say like my concern with John Day in June is that, depends when in June too, is it June 1st or June 30th? But it's like high cold water. Are you dressed appropriately for it, for the cold temperature? And if it's like high water, are you ready for like the continuous nature and how hard it might be to swim? So hopefully that helps. I think getting Tim's book, A Field Guide to Oregon Rivers, is probably your best source of information about the river. And then hopefully that helps. So that's it. On questions for the day, I covered everything. Let's make sure we got the last question. There's no more questions in the comments. And I just want to finish up by saying, hey, if you're interested in some winter boating next year, consider Ecuador, whether you go with us or not. If you want to just go on your own, and my friend Santi has a really cool lodge down there. If you want to just go and like book a trip with Santi, I'd highly encourage you to. Or if you want to go with one of our rowing schools, we'd love to have you all. But Ecuador is pretty cool. It's a great place to go boat in the winter. I would call it like a class four paradise. It's just so much class four is short driving distance to where we were, just Haina. But also like tons of class two and three as well. Like just a really cool place. So that's it for this episode. I'll see you next Tuesday.